everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. Hey, how are you doing today on this beautiful May 20th, 2014? Well, it's beautiful, finally, here in New York City. And one of the things that I love to do, you know, I love food. It's all about food. And I really enjoy eating outdoors. And we have a little terrace. And I got to eat outdoors several times today already, so it's a good day. Feeling the sun on me, making a little vitamin D while I'm eating. That's the way it's supposed to be, right? And this past weekend, you may know I live in the county of Queens in New York City, and we celebrated the 50th anniversary of the World's Fair back in 1964-1965 this weekend at the Queens Flushing Meadows Corona Park. Does anybody remember the World's Fair back in 1964-1965? Raise your hand. Who remembers? I remember. I was just a little thing then, but it made some tremendous impressions on me. And just going back and visiting this past weekend made me think of all the incredible things that have happened over 50 years. And can you imagine what is going to happen in the next 50 or at least the next 10 or 20? I cannot even imagine, but I know it's going to be good. Something to look forward to. Now, let's get back to food. My favorite subject. We're going to be talking about some serious food conversations here, serious food topics, and I'm going to bring on my first guest. Lauren Ornelas is the founder, director of Food Empowerment Project, a vegan food justice nonprofit seeking to create a more just world by helping consumers recognize the power of their food choices. Food Empowerment Project works in solidarity with farm workers, advocates for chocolate not sourced from the worst forms of child labor, and focuses on access to healthy foods in communities of color and low-income communities. When Lauren was the director of Viva USA, she investigated factory farms and ran consumer campaigns. In cooperation with activists across the country, she persuaded Trader Joe's to stop selling all duck meat and was the spark that got the founder of Whole Foods Market to become a vegan. She served as campaign director with the Silicon Valley Toxics Coalition for 6 years, and we can learn more about her at her websites, foodispower.org and veganmexicanfood.com. Lauren, welcome to It's All About Food.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Yes. Well, you are quite the powerhouse. And I've been following you for a long time, and I'm very glad I'm having the opportunity to have a little chat here with you.
It's wonderful to speak with you.
Yeah. So I hope we can hear you good enough. The connection is could be a little clearer. So just speak up, and we want to hear everything that you say.
Okay, great.
Okay. Now, Food Empowerment Project. If you go to foodispower.org, we can see all the different issues that you're working on. The thing that I want to talk about to start with is the issue of human slavery. Can we talk about that? You know, when I'm a vegan, I've been a vegan for a long time. And one of the responses that I used to get, not so much anymore, is that people say, you care so much about the animals, what about people? And many of us try to connect the dots because it is all connected. But we treat animals poorly, we treat humans terribly, and we treat children terribly. So what's going on with food production and human slavery?
Sure. I'll basically talk about two different types. And first of all, thank you for recognizing that these connections absolutely do exist. And that was one of the reasons why I started Food Empowerment Project, with our focus being food, because many of us vegans, you know, we started down this path because we are very compassionate people. We have a sense of what is and is not just, and we don't want to participate in those types of industries that cause harm to others. And with our food choices, it's an easier way to have an impact here. So when it comes to slavery, what got me thinking about this issue when it comes to chocolate was a English documentary where they actually interviewed a former slave for the chocolate industry. And the interviewer asked him, what would you say to people who eat chocolate? And his response was, they're eating my flesh.
Oh.
And as a vegan, I thought, well, that's the same thing as a non-human animal would say. And I had to really start to evaluate all of my food choices. And what's happening with the chocolate industry is in West Africa, there's approximately 1.8 million children who are victims of the worst forms of child labor, which also can include slavery. Here you have, basically Western chocolate companies not paying farmers what they should be paid for the amount of work and the product that they're producing. So they in turn end up employing children, and some end up basically sometimes stealing children from marketplaces and having them work for the chocolate industry, for the cocoa industry, where they go and they actually use dangerous equipment such as machetes to cut the cacao pods out of the cacao trees. Huh. Some children as young as 7 years old.
Now, I first found out about this maybe over a decade ago, and I'm sure it's been going on for a long time. Has there been any improvement?
There's been more awareness. I mean, I say awareness knowing that most people honestly still don't know about this issue. There has been legislation passed in the United States, the Harkin Engel Protocol, to work on this issue. But in terms of real concrete changes, there haven't been a lot. There are more certifications out there. Food Empowerment Project does not suggest people go based on certifications if they want to buy chocolate that doesn't come from West Africa. We encourage people to base their chocolate choices on the country of origin, which is why we created our chocolate list that lists companies we do and do not recommend based on where the chocolate is actually sourced from, which also has two apps that people can download for free. But the problem, unfortunately, is just incredibly prevalent, and we haven't seen it lightening up at all.
Okay, so where is chocolate grown where we can be confident that they're treating people properly?
So outside of West Africa, although we do have one company on our recommended list which grows cacao in Ghana, and they're a worker-owned cooperative, so the workers actually have the say, and it's not under the guise of Western corporations making these decisions. But elsewhere around the world is Latin America. You have Mexico. You have Indonesia and just other places. And actually Hawaii is trying to get it off the ground as well. But cacao isn't grown just anywhere.
Okay, now you have this great list on your website, foodispower.org/chocolate-list. And it's a long list of different companies that sell chocolate, and there's the good and there's the not so good, and then there's can you talk a little bit about this list and how it was created?
Sure.
How you got this information?
Absolutely. So when I would give talks about the chocolate issue, people would inevitably say, well, what chocolate can I eat? And so we realized we had to create a resource for people. And since we're a vegan organization, any company on that list has to make at least one vegan chocolate bar. So we'll get emails from people asking about Häagen-Dazs or other companies, and we'll explain that, you know, unless they make a vegan product, they don't make our list. So that's the first criteria, obviously, because of the suffering of cows in the dairy industry.
Mm-hmm.
But second to that is that we recommend companies that are not sourcing from West Africa. So those are the companies that are recommended. We don't recommend companies that will not be transparent, meaning that when we've asked them, where are you sourcing your cacao from, they refuse to tell us. And surprisingly on that list is Clif Bar, which is why we have a campaign right now to get Clif Bar to disclose. We also can't recommend companies that don't respond to us either. So that's kind of the breakdown of our list. We do give, you know, we contact the companies and we give them about a month and a half to 2 months to respond to us with three contacts. So we contact them at least three times.
Now, I'm going through this list and I've been here before. It's I have mixed feelings when I visit here because my heart always sinks when I read the long list of the ones that you don't recommend. It's just, oh, no. But you know, if not eating chocolate is our worst problem, we're not doing too badly.
Right, exactly. Well, the good thing is that enough people have written some of their favorite companies on our Do Not Recommend list based on if they didn't respond or because they're sourcing. And we have had companies change suppliers, and we've also had companies be transparent with us. And honestly, transparency is the first step in creating any change out there.
So I just wanted to point out a few 365 Dark Chocolate Bar by Whole Foods you feel comfortable recommending. There's a lot of other on this list, but then the ones that I guess are the most well-known in my world, I just wanted to bring up. So the ones that you cannot recommend just flat out, that's a pretty short list. Hershey's, Scharfenberg,
yeah.
And this other one, Nori Sirius Chocolate. So that you flat out know where they're sourcing the chocolate and they're bad.
Yes.
And had they responded?
We didn't even bother contacting Hershey because we know very well where they source from. And actually, you know what? We did end up contacting them because at first we didn't have them on our list because we didn't think they made anything vegan. And then we found out they made cocoa powder. So that's really the only ingredient that product we know that they make that's vegan. But yeah, so if you look down, the companies who we just don't recommend at all means they didn't even make any noises like we're aware of the issue and we're trying, you know.
Say that again. The ones that didn't. Can you repeat that? I just missed that. You said the companies that weren't making any noises about what?
Yeah. So basically, when our list, when we have that the companies are not recommended but working on it, that means that we're not going to recommend them because they're still sourcing from West Africa, but that they at least said we're aware of the issue and maybe they have some type of certification. But a film called Shady Chocolate, which came out maybe a year or so ago, exposed a lot of the certifications and that they were still finding child labor, possibly trafficked children on many of these farms that were certified.
Wow. And then there are the companies that just don't respond at all. And I know Trader Joe's is really good at not responding to a lot of questions about where they source food or where their food is made. I have some close relatives that are always concerned about celiac and whether food is contaminated with wheat or gluten, and they're not very transparent about that information. So I'm not surprised that they're not transparent about chocolate either.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's the deal with Clif Bar? I thought they were a nice company.
Well, they definitely, you know, do some things in the social responsibility realm that they should be credited for, but the lack of transparency when it comes to chocolate is a big black mark on their record.
Mm-hmm.
And it is something that we have a right to know as consumers, especially when we're talking about something as serious as child labor and possibly slavery. We want consumers to reach out to them and ask them to be accountable for where their chocolate's coming from. And again, all we're asking for is transparency. We're not asking for the city or even the state or the name of the farm. All we're asking for is country of origin. So to claim that this information is proprietary is an absolute joke.
All right. It's easy to point the finger at other countries and say, yeah, they treat their people horribly here, but unfortunately, we don't have a very good record here in the United States either. So I was just reading today or a few days ago in the New York Times talking about children on tobacco farms in this country and how the laws are written so that families get away with this.
Yeah, it's really appalling. The great that report came out recently, and there's been a lot of noises as well about farm workers in the produce industry, where we as vegans should also be concerned about where our food is coming from and how those workers are treated. And here in the United States, you have approximately 400,000 children who work, you know, here in the fields. You have some children as young as 5 years old who are working, and these are all because of loopholes in the federal law. It's because the fact that these farmers are unwilling to pay the farm workers living decent wages, even though these people work countless hours a day, sometimes 14 hours a day in extreme temperatures, providing food for all of us. I mean, unless you're eating only what you grow out of your garden, more than likely your food is coming from farm workers who are not treated right in this country. And it's absolutely appalling that this country allows this to continue.
Now, I remember reading maybe 5 years ago or so about the tomato industry in Florida, and there was a movement there to expose the slavery. It was outright slavery of people being brought in from other countries, Mexico and other places, to Florida against their will, even thinking that they were going to be getting an opportunity, and then they were the stories were horrific. And there has been some progress, and basically the companies are charging like a penny more a pound or something ridiculous in order to treat these people better and guarantee better conditions for them.
Exactly. What they do in the United States, what these contractors do at times, is they take the passports away from the workers. So they're kind of, they don't have anywhere to go. Their freedom is taken away. And it's the coalition of Immokalee workers who are working on this in Florida, and all they're asking for is exactly one penny more per pound for the bushel of tomatoes that they pick. And they've been successful in getting a lot of corporations to do this, yet they still currently have campaigns against Wendy's and Publix who have yet to just agree to pay one penny more per pound for the tomatoes they pick.
Yeah, it's just crazy. So where else do we have slavery in the United States?
There's, not surprisingly, the animal agriculture industry also has, you know, slavery riddled through some of their supply chains, where you have workers maybe coming from Peru and other countries where they come to work in, say, cattle ranching, and they'll have these workers basically in the middle of nowhere, where the farms will actually go and provide the workers with water and with food, and they're left to the elements themselves. They don't have cell phone access. If they run out of water, they're kind of at the mercy until the ranchers come back to bring them water. So it's, you know, unfortunately, these situations, exactly as you said, we can't just point to another country. We need to look here and see what it is that we're doing in our own country.
Okay, so what do we do? Clearly, when it comes to animal agribusiness, we don't eat animals. But for all of us compassionate vegans who need our fruits and vegetables, how do we know that the people that are providing our food are treated well?
Exactly. No, I know. And I so appreciate all the compassionate vegans who want to go beyond veganism in their compassion. And with farm workers, it's a difficult task. It's not like we can look for a certain seal. It's not like we can look at where it's sourced from. What we can do, you know, our organization tries to do things. We did a school supply drive last year for the children of farm workers. We're going to be doing a food supply drive, ironically, for farm workers in the next couple weeks to help them have food on their tables. Buying organic, you know, kind of like if you know how cows are treated in the dairy industry, you know, organic doesn't necessarily mean the cows are treated any better. It's the same way with the farm workers, but it does mean one less bad thing is happening to them. So if you can afford to buy organic, that is a good thing. Speaking out to the grocery stores, letting them know it matters to you. If you go to the farmer's market, make sure that you talk to the people who are there about, you know, how the workers are treated and make sure that they know it's important to you. There are a couple of seals and certifications that are being worked on, but most seem in the preliminary stages at this point. But it isn't as easy as go vegan or the chocolate issue when it comes to our produce at this point.
Oh, wow.
I know. I know, right? It's just so...
Yeah.
But the thing is the more, you know, you can lend your voices to state legislation and any regulations, we try to keep people informed on regulations and legislation so that people know when they can use your voices. I mean, think about some of the changes. We have a long way to go for animals, but some of the changes that our collective voices have made for non-human animals, we can use our voices collectively as well to take care of the human animals, too.
I guess at least we're talking about it, and that's a first step. There's so many things that go on in this world in the United States, horrible things. There's child abuse and all kinds of molestation and abuse is going on that we don't see, we don't know about, battering, and the list is endless. And there's more legislation that's trying to prevent all of these things, but so much of it is just out of our view. It's really hard to know what's going on.
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm just going to put a little light out there. Put a little energy out there and hope for the best. Okay, let's move on then. So what else is going on with the Food Empowerment Project?
So a couple things. One is we have a newsletter for new vegans or people who are interested in going vegan. And it's a newsletter that they will receive in the mail for free if they sign up, and they get one issue a month for the year. And our hope is that to kind of be a way of support for new vegans, so that they have a reminder every month as to why they made this decision. So every issue comes with a story of an animal and how they're treated in the ag industry, as well as a rescue story from various sanctuaries, including Vine and Farm Sanctuary and some of the other sanctuaries around the country, happy stories of these animals when they get into sanctuaries. It also includes recipes, nutrition information, and also information on environmental and labor issues, so that if somebody is going vegan for, you know, everybody goes vegan for different reasons, but if it's for an environmental reason, they can also be reminded of all the reasons why it helps the animals as well as the planet to not consume animals any longer. So that's something we just launched in January, and we're taking 500 sign-ups for that. And one of the other products we have going on is our Access to Healthy Food work, which we're currently working in Vallejo. Again, if people aren't familiar, lack of access to healthy foods is a big problem in communities of color and low-income communities, which is often referred to as a food desert. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to make an assessment of the foods that are and aren't available, not only fruits and vegetables, but also meat and dairy alternatives. Many people of color were lactose intolerant, so we need to have those dairy alternatives, as well as those young people who want to go vegan, who want to have some of the alternatives available. So we're trying to see what is and isn't available in these communities and help the groups that work on these issues gain better access.
Great. Now you have now on to a happy subject, and you
because,
well, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, sometimes I just throw up my hands and I go, just go vegan. It'll just solve so many things. It doesn't necessarily solve the people that are the conditions of the people growing the vegetables, but it does solve many, many problems, and from there we can solve the rest of them. But the point is that the food is delicious, and you have another website, Vegan Mexican Food. Is that it?
Yes, veganmexicanfood.com.
.com.
It's fully translated in English and in Spanish.
Right. Now, what motivated that?
I'm a Chicana, so I'm, you know, used to growing up with Mexican food, and a lot of our food is pretty easy to be made vegan. Some is already vegan. And so it made sense to me to reach out to our communities and make sure that we were aware of the different types of foods that are available. We take recipes from anybody who wants to donate their recipes. We're trying to keep it pretty grassroots, that we want people who support our work to donate and get credit for the recipes. But some of the recipes come from my family, who over the decades now have had to figure out different foods to veganize so that I could eat with everyone.
What to feed Lauren? She's such a problem.
That is a big problem in general, definitely.
Well, I love Mexican food, beans and beans and beans and rice and rice and rice. I can eat it all day and just throw a bunch of spices on them, and it's great, and it's cheap.
It is, yes.
Ah, now you've gotten around. So you were in your bio it said you were the spark that got the founder of Whole Foods to go vegan. How did that happen?
I was running a group called Viva USA at the time, where I conducted investigations of factory farms and slaughterhouses, and we did investigations across the U.S. of duck farms, and part of our campaign was making sure that the grocery stores quit selling duck meat. As you mentioned, we were successful in getting Trader Joe's to stop selling duck meat, as well as a couple of small natural health food stores and Pier 1 Imports to stop using feathers in all of their products. Mm. But Whole Foods was a difficult target. I believed, I'm from Texas, they're based in Texas, I thought it would be all Texas friendly, they would just listen to me, but didn't turn out that way, and so we got them to quit carrying duck meat from one of the farms we investigated, and were not as quickly successful in getting the other farm. So we actually had a campaign against Whole Foods Market for a number of years, which took place across the country, and the founder of Whole Foods and I had a, I don't know, a nice way to call it. We met, let's say, at a shareholders meeting, and I spoke, and we spoke afterwards, and he and I emailed back and forth for several weeks after that meeting, kind of going back and forth, arguing about everything. And finally he said, you know, I'm done talking to you. I don't have anything more to say to you. So I just wrote him back one more email, because that's just how I do it. And then 6 months later, he wrote me and said that after our conversation, he'd done a lot of reading, read up on the issue, and that he had made a decision to go vegan.
Wow. And how did you feel about that? That was huge. I remember reading about that.
Yeah. I fell out of my chair. It's absolute truth. I just couldn't believe it. It was like one of the rolly chairs. And, you know, being a nonprofit, it wasn't the most stable, brand new chair or anything. So that's probably aided to why I fell out of my chair. But, yeah, I literally fell out of my chair and just kind of was waiting to see, like, how real was this, you know, because it could have been a hoax. He could have just thought that way for a little while. And, yeah, it was quite amazing. And we've been in touch still over the years, and we communicate. In the beginning, we communicated a lot, and I'd give him my input, and I still do on a lot of what Whole Foods is up to. But, yeah, it was very shocking.
Well, that was a huge accomplishment, because Whole Foods isn't perfect. No person or company is perfect, but they have done a lot of very good things, and I think some of it stems from John Mackey's decision to go vegan and want to offer more whole, minimally processed foods that are affordable, so that people can get kale if they want it. And I think that was a very powerful thing. So thank you for that. You can you can just take the rest of your life off and relax. You don't have to do any more work. You've done.
Well, I've heard that. I'm waiting for my heart and my head to feel that way. But at this point, it's still pushing to be done. But thank you. It was pretty amazing.
Well, I look forward to hear what you do next, and who you convince to go vegan next.
Well, thank you very much, and I thank you for, it's so hard doing this work and feeling like, you know, there's sometimes overwhelming, the issues that we work on at Food Empowerment Project, but it helps when people like you care and want to learn and want to make a difference. So, and thanks for ending this on a lighter note. So it's not so heavy for me feeling like I just depressed everybody.
I know, it is so hard. But here, I'm sending some light out to you too. Yeah.
Thank you.
What I like to do on this program, it's a safe place for vegans to talk about the good things and the not-so-good things. Thank you, Lauren, for joining me.
Great. Thanks so much.
Okay. Be strong.
Thanks. Take care.
Okay. Wow, that was Lauren Ornelas. And find out more at foodispower.org, because it is. Food is power. And I definitely recommend going to that list on their website about chocolate, because we don't want to be supporting child slavery. And they've made it easy to do that by avoiding the companies that we know are questionable or aren't being transparent. Shall we take a little break? Okay, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the injustice of our food system with Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs.